Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents On to Stalingrad, Operation Winter Thunderstorm and the Attempt to Relieve 6th Army, December 1942. By Horst Scheibert. Translated by Janice W. Anker. Narrated by Derek Perkins. Forward. Stalingrad. The name of the industrial city on the Volga will be connected forever with the cataclysmic battle that was fought here between August 1942 and February 1943, and which led to the destruction of the German 6th Army in the ruins of the city that bore Stalin's name. The events of the battle within the pocket are well known and have been thoroughly studied, not least the gruesome details of human suffering on both sides. One episode in this struggle is, however, less known and understood. In fact, this chapter is often mentioned only in passing when the Battle of Stalingrad is discussed. This is the German relief attempt, which saw a German panzer corps fight its way towards the encircled 6th Army. This operation, called Wintergewitter, or Winter Thunderstorm, was facing problems from the start. The Germans were not able to assemble the envisaged force of four divisions, and, in the end, the attack was launched on 12th December 1942 by only two divisions, the 6th and 23rd Panzer Divisions. During the operation, some reinforcements arrived, in particular the 17th Panzer Division, but the odds were against the Germans from the start. The Soviets realized the threat that this relief operation posed and threw large quantities of troops against the German 57th Panzer Corps. As a consequence, the German advance was slow and costly, but the German troops continued to fight their way towards the encircled troops in Stalingrad. However, by 24th December 1942, the troops were exhausted, and Soviet counterattacks forced the Germans to abandon the offensive. This sealed the fate of the soldiers in Stalingrad. The encircled troops had been able to hear the fighting of the advancing relief forces and their clashes with the Soviets. Over the Christmas period, they noticed that the sound of battle faded, and they realized that the relief attempt had failed. This was a bitter Christmas present for the encircled troops, who understood that this meant the end of the 6th Army. The relief force was stopped approximately 48 kilometers short of the pocket. At this stage, the only chance of survival for at least a part of the encircled troops would have been the attempt to break through to the relief force. This order never came. The consequences were bitter for the soldiers in Stalingrad. The exact casualty figures are not known, but it is fair to assume that approximately 100,000 men died in the pocket. 90,000 went into captivity, and only 5,000 returned home. The Soviets suffered even higher casualties in this tragic episode of World War II. This book, first published in German in 1956, tells the story of the relief attempt. The author, Horst Scheibert, served as a company commander in one of the tank companies of 6th Panzer Division as it was fighting its way towards the perimeter of the Stalingrad pocket. He continued to fight in the Wehrmacht after the relief attempt had failed, and, by the end of the war, he had been highly decorated, including both classes of the Iron Cross and the German Cross in gold. After World War II, he joined the West German Bundeswehr and reached the rank of brigadier. Combining the reports in war diaries and other official communications with his own personal experience, the author creates a vivid picture of the struggles as the division desperately tried to fight its way to the perimeter of the Stalingrad pocket. The fighting was hard. As Scheibert states in the introduction, his regiment lost 7 out of 8 tank company commanders in December 1942. Only Scheibert escaped unscathed. It is this combination of different perspectives that makes the book particularly valuable, and which offers new insights into this less well-known episode of one of the most gruesome struggles in the history of warfare. Professor Matthias Strohn, Master of Studies, Doctor of Philosophy, Fellow of the Royal Historical Society, Head of Historical Analysis, Centre for Historical Analysis and Conflict Research, Camberley, Visiting Professor of Military Studies, University of Buckingham. Glossary of Rank Equivalents. German, General de Infanteria. English, General of the Infantry. General der Panzertruppe, General of Armored Troops, Generalleutnant, Lieutenant General, Oberst, Colonel, Oberstleutnant, Lieutenant Colonel, Major, Major, Hauptmann, Captain, Oberleutnant, First Lieutenant, Leutnant, Lieutenant, Stabsfeldwebel, Staff Sergeant, Oberfeldwebel, First Sergeant, Feldwebel, Sergeant, Unteroffizier, Corporal, Obergefreiter, Lance Corporal. Editor's note. These are only approximate equivalents, as some German ranks have no real equivalent in English-speaking armies. Introduction. In his book, Verlorene Siege, Lost Victories, Generalfeldmarschall Erich von Manstein writes, "This life-and-death race, which began with the 12th December appearance of the 4th Panzer Army to relieve the 6th Army, can only be drawn here in broad strokes. It is impossible to describe the lightning-quick shift in circumstances that the 57th Panzer Corps faced, with an enemy who continuously threw new forces into the battle, tanks above all. The agility of our panzer commanders and the superiority of our panzer crews stood the test brilliantly during this time, as did the bravery of the panzer grenadiers and the ingenuity of our anti-tank defence. At the same time, however, it also demonstrated what an old, tried and true panzer division, such as the 6th, could accomplish in battle when fully equipped with panzers and assault weapons, and while under the superb command of General Raus and the panzer commander Oberst von Hünensdorf, who would unfortunately die in battle later, while at the vanguard of this division. The task of the present volume is to represent as clearly as possible the situation described in the aforementioned statement. It is not possible to describe the quick-as-lightning shift of circumstances in the battles of the 57th Panzer Corps. In doing so, I hope to rescue from oblivion these difficult campaigns which were so momentous in their goals, tragic in their outcome, but rich in lessons learned. If this narrative relies heavily on the perspective of the 6th Panzer Division, it is because at one point in time this division, which was in the middle of the 57th Panzer Corps, had to shoulder the main burden of the battles. Moreover, thanks to its strengths, it helped support its neighbours who were weaker in materiel. In addition, the author himself was a member of this division, serving as commander of a panzer company in Battlegroup Hünersdorf, a key player, and participated in all the battles during that period. Lastly, for a certain time, the only original data sources from that period were from this division. The publications thus far on the attempt to relieve Stalingrad are almost all tarnished by inaccuracies as to time, locations, and numbers. There are also distortions, both intentional and unintentional, as well as exaggerated and embroidered versions of events. Relying as it does on a large number of documents, this book places particular emphasis on objectivity. A further reason for the scarcity of factual reporting thus far may also lie in the fact that the operation stood under the shadow of the Stalingrad situation itself. Of the officers involved, a great many were killed in this and in later battles, or were wounded and sidelined early on. From the 11th Panzer Regiment of the 6th Panzer Division, for instance, after just 1 month of deployment, from 3rd December 1942 on, out of the 8 combat company commanders, only this author was still available for duty. For the other units, it was not much different. This fact explains why, until now, only the former members of the higher leadership staffs or outside observers have written on this subject. Even with the best of intentions, particularly for the latter group, it was naturally impossible to provide them with objective and precise descriptions from a military science perspective. In the spelling of the place names, it must be noted that at that time a variety of map materials were available. On the German side, 1 to 100,000 and 1 to 300,000. On the Russian side, 1 to 200,000. All editions provide designations in modified spellings. Except citations from reproductions of captured Russian orders and other sources, efforts were made to synchronize all the designations that appear in this book. The time designations on the German side are given in Central European time, so that, due to the distances involved, the local time will be 2 hours later. Without the generous help, providing details, reports, and documents, of many participants of the battles at that time, especially the former Hauptmann, Captain, and Adjutant of Battlegroup Hunersdorf, Helmut Rittgen, it would not have been possible to complete this compilation. I wish to take this opportunity to express my gratitude for all their help. Weilburg Lahn, 31st December 1955. Horst Scheibert. Chapter 1. Advance, Objectives, and Initial Situation. End of November to beginning of December 1942. Maps 1 and 2. Equipment and battle strength of the 6th Panzer Division. Transport from Brittany to the Kalmyk Steppe. The Southern Front, mid-November. The battles beginning on 19th November 1942. Both sides of Stalingrad. In May 1942, after the hard winter battles of 1941-42 in the Moscow area, the 6th Panzer Division was transferred to France, Brittany, for rest and replenishment. The 11th Panzer Regiment, previously supplied with equipment such as the Skoda 35T, was to receive new German weapons and vehicles. Although in previous deployments, Poland, France, the Baltics, Leningrad, and Moscow, the Skoda Panzers had proven excellent, members of the regiment looked forward to the new German models, in great measure because during the previous deployments it had grown clear that the Skoda, with its 3.7-centimetre cannons, was no match for the Russian T-34 and the K-6 and 2, which were seen more and more often. Unfortunately, these hopes were dashed. In place of the all-terrain wheeled vehicles so desperately desired, especially in the supply area, the regiment received more conventional motor vehicles, which came in a myriad of models, with problems such as weak engines and axles. In future deployments, the equipment situation would become not only problematic, but often critical. The same was true of tractors, one of the few vehicles of German manufacture actually usable in the Eastern deployment, but whose distribution was inadequate. The equipment inventory for the 11th Panzer Regiment was in accord with the War Strength Table of Organization 1103. It consisted of 21 Panzer IIs, 2-centimetre cannon, long, 75 Panzer IIIs, 5-centimetre cannons, long, 30 Panzer IIIs, 7.5-centimetre cannon, short, 24 Panzer IVs, 7.5-centimetre cannons, long, and 9 Armoured Command post vehicles. Translator's note. Most of these vehicles came in 2 variations, the first with a short-barrelled cannon, and later models with the longer barrel. The longer barrel gave higher velocity and greater effect than the short barrel. With this, the division now owned over 160 Panzers, compared with its previous inventory of only 200 Skodas, which were less powerful. This difference in numbers arose from the consolidation of 3 battalions into 2 during the process of the restructuring. Further, the staff of the 6th Rifle Brigade disappeared. The 4th and 114th Rifle Regiments were redesignated as Panzer Grenadier Regiments. The 57th Reconnaissance Battalion and the 6th Motorcycle Rifle Battalion, Kreuzschütz 6, were consolidated into the 6th Reconnaissance Battalion, but the nickname K6 still held on for some time. The author or the radio messages often, confusingly, refer to K6. To prevent confusion, this translation will use 6th Reconnaissance Battalion in lieu of K6. In the effort to strengthen armour, 2nd Battalion 114th Panzer Grenadier Regiment received SPWs, Schützenpanzerwagen, for troop transport, as well as 1st Battalion 76th Artillery Regiment, and 1 company of self-propelled gun carriages from the 41st Panzerjäger Battalion. SPW means Schützenpanzerwagen, which means Armoured Infantry Carrier. This is most similar to the American half-track. See F.M. von Zenger und Etterlin, German Tanks of World War II, Stackpole Books 1969, plate number 144 in illustrated section. This translation will use SPW. These last three formations, along with parts of the now stronger armoured combat engineers, 57th Pioneer Battalion, and the Panzer Regiment, were intended to represent the armoured component within the division. All exercises and war games were based on this. 57th Pioneer Battalion was an engineer battalion. At first glance, the division now appeared stronger than before. But at regimental level, this was not the case, especially when compared to the enemy, whose equipment had been strengthened in the meantime. Apart from the smaller number of German troops, the German panzer models proved to be a poor match for the Russian ones. The German Panzer II and III, 7.5 centimetres short, were intended to be deployed primarily against the enemy's infantry troops, and when deployed against the T-34, the Panzer III, 5 centimetres long, was only effective at 800 metres or closer. The Russian T-34, on the other hand, could destroy every panzer model present in the regiment, hitting from as great a distance as 1,500 metres. The penetration power of the Russian 7.62 centimetre cannon, T-34, was met or exceeded only by the German 7.5 centimetre long and, naturally, the well-known 8.8 centimetre anti-aircraft gun, FLAC. British and American nomenclature uses millimetres, for example, 76.2 millimetre cannon. These two stronger weapons, however, were available in only relatively small numbers, in the anti-tank units, Panzerjäger, designated anti-aircraft units, and the Panzer Regiment, with its 24 Panzer IVs. Assuming that in a longer deployment the number of panzers facing the enemy quickly decreases and then levels off to about one-third of the starting inventory, not many weapons remained with sufficient power to challenge the enemy. Despite this, after the months-long infantry deployments of the previous winter in the outskirts of Moscow, and after the loss of almost all vehicles, the division was quite pleased to finally receive the weapons they had been deprived of for so long. Along with rest and recovery in Brittany, visits home and excursions to the Atlantic and Channel coasts, field exercises were carried out with enthusiasm and a desire to gain confidence with the new equipment and to orient their replacements in their new tasks. The division originated in Rhineland and Westphalia and recruited there. The Westphalians had outstanding soldierly qualities. The Rhinelanders brought mobility, whilst the men of the Ruhr offered mechanical expertise, which made up an impressive complement of talents. In previous deployments, the division had experienced substantial victories, and, thanks to good leadership, casualties remained within a tolerable range. This meant that, along with the irreplaceable older Lance Corporals, Obergefreiten, there was still a good stock of NCOs and officers. These were men who had sweated together through many of the same deployments, had experienced combat, and were filled with esprit. From this perspective, the level of combat power could be characterized as excellent. Every soldier felt far superior to his Russian counterpart, had confidence in his weapons, and confidence in his well-trained leaders. Particularly in the Panzer Regiment, there existed a relationship between all service ranks that was rich in trust and shared destiny. They fought as one team. The division commander, Generalmajor Raus, like all regimental and battalion or detachment commanders, came up through the division and enjoyed the complete trust of all soldiers. Abteilung means battalion or detachment, depending on context. A few months prior to the first deployment of the 11th Panzer Regiment, the regimental commander, Oberst R. Kohl, was transferred to a different area of responsibility in the OKH, Oberkommando des Heeres, which means Army High Command, which caused no small amount of grief. But the new commander, Oberst von Hunersdorf, soon proved to be a fully effective replacement, particularly later in the deployment. The entire division now faced its new mission with confidence. By the end of October 1942, there were ever-growing hints that the pleasant time in Brittany was about to end. After the landing of the Americans in North Africa, there were hopes of being sent to occupy southern France. Such hopes soon proved false. Winter gear for both vehicles and men came rolling in, and by the beginning of November the first embarkations for the Eastern Front began. The train route began in a sweep around Paris, then continued diagonally through western Germany, through part of Berlin, and further on to the east. At the Oder River, the first snow appeared. Their stated destination was southern Russia, and their mission was to assemble behind the long front held by allies, Romanians, Italians, and Hungarians. Because there were no deployment orders yet, the division was to remain in the area between the Don and Donets, in the approximate area of Milirova, as Army Group Reserve. Baranovice. Here began White Russia, and, with it, partisan territory. Destroyed locomotives and wagons were clearly visible on both sides of the train track, signs of the partisan warfare that had been waged here. All the way through the gigantic forest regions to Gomel, route security was strengthened. As a safeguard against mines, a wagon carrying sand travelled in front of the locomotive engine. Bryansk lay in deep snow. Further along from Kursk to Bielgorod, the terrain opened up and we entered Ukraine, with its steppe stretching to the south and east. The news from Stalingrad dominated our conversations. Despite a lack of clarity in the earliest reports, it was clear that since 21st November a large number of troops had been surrounded, and that outside of this Kessel, or pocket, the battles continued. To the officers it seemed quite certain that we would be deployed there sooner or later. At Kharkov we had to cross the Donets River in order to reach the area of Milirova. For most of the division, the trip south, toward the area of the Donets, continued at an increased tempo. At Rostov we crossed the Don, continued further south near Salsk, and turned off to the northeast toward Stalingrad. From the opposite direction came trains with the wounded, and members of our division who first encountered them passed on the news of fighting at Kachelnikova. There was no longer any question about where the entire division would be deployed. As the journey continued, we moved more and more slowly, and the trains sometimes moved within visual distance of each other. The transports from Brittany to this region took 18 to 20 days' travel, and every man longed for the journey's end. Only someone who had experienced transport with 8 men in one section, with a perpetually stinking stove, constant freezing temperatures, never being properly washed, and never being able to stretch out, all of this for a period of 450 hours, could ever comprehend the term transport rage, transport cholera. At the start of December, the first panzer transports unloaded about 30 kilometres southwest of Kachelnikova. They would not be given a long rest. The following overview of the previous day's events on the Don may provide a better understanding of what we faced. In mid-November of 1942, after the summer offensive, the southern flank of the German Army East lay as follows. Army Group A was in the Caucasus, with its right flank at the Black Sea. Its left flank, however, became lost in the steppe south of Elista, never having reached the Caspian Sea. Russian resistance was hardening, to the same degree as the Germans, with both suffering the effects of the enormous distances, shortages in fuel, ammunition, and all types of supplies. Far to the north, in the area of Stalingrad, a second very strong assembly of German forces, the 6th Army and 4th Panzer Army, was engaged in intense battles with the Russians, who were throwing increasing numbers into those fights. In the Kalmyk steppe, between these two groups, stood the Romanian 4th Army, front length about 250 kilometres, which had almost no contact with the one and only backup unit, the German 16th Infantry Division motorised at Elista. On a 600-kilometre-long front northwest of Stalingrad, adjoined to the Italian 8th Army and the Hungarian 2nd Army, was the Romanian 3rd Army. This front stretched from the upper corner of the larger bend of the Don almost to Voronezh. Not until Voronezh were German units joined with them along this front. Positioned behind the Allied armies were only a few reserves, but actually with no strong German troop units. This line was known to be dangerously weak. Army Group B, which manned the stretch from Elista to Voronezh, often pointed out this hazardous situation to higher-ups, but sufficient measures were never taken. The weakness of these Allied armies offered the Russians the chance to cut off Stalingrad directly. And on 19th November 1942, that is just what happened. The Russian forces, each with an assault army reinforced by masses of tanks, came at Stalingrad from the north and south. Within 48 hours they defeated the weak Romanian resistance and closed the ring around Stalingrad. It would be unjust to shift the blame for this onto the Romanians. Unlike the Italians and Hungarians, whose lines ultimately crumbled, they fought with superb bravery, but neither in terms of equipment, strength, nor leadership were they a match for the Russian onslaught. The mistake lay in the basic approach to the summer operations by the OKW, Oberkommando der Wehrmacht, which means Armed Forces High Command. It attempted to achieve too much all at the same time, with forces that were too weak. Later on, they assigned the Allies a sector of the front that was too important and too long. By this time, it had become Hitler's obsession to capture the city that bore the name of his greatest adversary at any cost. Therefore, the OKW ordered Army Group B, in an incredibly ignorant assessment of the enemy, to throw all its units into the all-consuming battle for the city of Stalingrad. Although risk-taking does involve pushing limits, the limits here were greatly exceeded. After having failed to take the city in the first onslaught, there should never have been this kind of concentration of forces on such an exposed position. The northward attack by the Russians took place from a rather large bridgehead that remained available to them at the upper bend of the River Don. After breaking through the Romanian Third Army, the Russians rolled their tank corps toward the south and southeast, and soon reached the most important resupply railway and the strongest bridge across the Don at Kalach. The German troops fighting at Stalingrad were now cut off from their supply base. Coming across the Volga and from the Kalmyk steppe, the Russian southern vanguard overcame the defences of the Romanian Fourth Army positioned there, blocked the railway coming from the southwest, Salsk, and, after a hard fight against the weak and hastily built-up German lines of defence, was able to reach the Don south of Kalach, where they were able to shake hands with the Russian troops arriving from the north. Despite their immediate counterattack, the 48th Panzer Corps, held in reserve on the Chir River, was unable to prevent the encirclement of the 6th Army. The larger portion of the 4th Panzer Army was also trapped with them. This Panzer Corps consisted only of the 22nd Panzer Division, which was not at its best in terms of materiel, and the Romanian 1st Tank Division, which had recently been created and was not yet experienced in combat. Later, with help from the quickly created Army Detachment, Holit, a new line of defence on the Chir River was built and strengthened with great effort. Army Detachment Holit is also known as Group Holit in some contexts. During the first days of the operation south of the Don, the Russians pushed slowly toward the southwest in the direction of Katilnikova, even though any great victories would have been denied them there. In the entire region between Elista and the Don, all that was left was the staff of the 4th Panzer Army and two Romanian cavalry divisions with a total strength of 1,200 riders. The Russians had made their thrust between the staff of 4th Panzer Army and its two divisions. The German security forces that were immediately formed from such elements as rear echelon staffs, supply troops, workshops, and so forth, Panwitz, Mikosch, etc., did in fact fight bravely, but were unable to withstand the strong enemy charge. This created a gap of 150 kilometres. The Russians did not seize this opportunity, possibly because they placed higher priority on the Stalingrad Ring. More than that, they would face 19 German and 2 Romanian divisions, whose total strength of 200,000 men would stretch their capabilities. To achieve a tighter consolidation of the participating armies on the German side, Army Group Don was created under command of Field Marshal von Manstein. Under this command were placed the 6th Army, the 4th Panzer Army, and the Romanian 3rd Army. The remainder of the Romanian 4th Army was assigned to the 4th Panzer Army. Their stated mission was to bring the enemy attacks to a halt and win back the positions taken by the Russians. Army Group Don now received new forces. From Army Group B came Army Detachment Holit. From Army Group A came the General Headquarters of 57th Panzer Corps, along with the battle-weary 23rd Panzer Division. Further additions included the 6th Panzer Division, which was still in the process of transport, and later, coming from further away, the 11th and 17th Panzer Divisions, with some Luftwaffe, Air Force, Field Divisions.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?